This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
Welcome. This is the Hebrew Order of David, the HOD Hour, as usual on a Thursday evening. Tonight we have an interesting mix. First, we're going to start with a little discussion we had earlier with Rabbi Kiveman, who, of course, everybody well knows is very buoyant and exuberant rabbi who really has got the community and the community spirit at heart. And he works a lot with elderly people in order to make them feel comfortable. And he's been especially prevalent and really occupied with him during lockdown. Next week is Hanukkah, and he's busy doing a fundraiser and also organizing a huge menorah, which is going to be in Sandton Square. And in addition to that, he's wants to reach out to the elderly in the community with whom he has been working, as I said, over COVID. And here is a short extract from the interview that I had with him earlier.
Hello, Stan. What a great show you got. And I want to just thank you for the opportunity to share with you and your listeners a little bit about the Chabad Seniors programs, the activities we've been running for decades, even before, long before I came to this country, across South Africa. But specifically, if I could talk with you just for a few minutes to tell your listeners a little bit about what we've been doing, certainly in the past decade since I've arrived, where the Chabad Seniors programs were really a hub of excitement and daily activity at the Central Chabad House in Savoy, right across from the Capri Hotel. And if you would come by any day, you know we have our bus mitzvah that would be picking up seniors from all over town, and many seniors would come on their own, and we would provide the opportunity for seniors to socialize, to stimulate, educate. We had classes going on of all kinds. We had shiurim. We've had guest lectures on all different types of topics. We've had outings. Every day the seniors would come. There would be refreshments in the morning, a full 4-course lunch in the afternoon. There would be tech tutors giving them training with their iPads and using technology. We would go out in outings. We would have all types of activities. And as many seniors put it to me, this gave them a reason to get up in the mornings. However, we know what this year has brought us. And like many of our programs, the Chabad senior activities, we really had to evolve with the new realities that were enforced upon us with the lockdown, with COVID-19, with everything, the realities of the past year. I can't believe that it's nearly a year since this has been going on, but it's already 8-9 months. And so, Stan, we had to determine what we're going to do. And to tell you the truth, it was the safety of our seniors. That was our number one priority. And since lockdown, we literally revolutionized, adapted, and innovated. We, like many others, have provided shiurim online. I give on a regular daily basis at least 2 Zoom shiurim online, and sometimes 3 or 4 such classes. We've supplemented programs with senior-specific webinars. We've had many such, just talking about the well-being of the elderly in many different aspects with many great doctors and personalities presenting. And we've just designed sessions to promote wellness for senior citizens at home. But that satisfied only a portion of the needs that we committed to addressing. We were greatly concerned the seniors are a potentially vulnerable population, and we needed to find ways to maintain health at home, not just avoiding contagious situations, transmitting a disease or catching it, God forbid, but beyond just being COVID-free. So one of the first things we did was we launched Chabad Care Callers. Let me tell you, Stan, every day we have a committed group of volunteers who are picking up the phone and calling into senior citizens, checking in, seeing how they're doing. And these calls provide a live interaction. It's a human voice that reaches out and says, tell me how you are. This has been going on since March. At the same time, our volunteers developed a relationship with the seniors. And if a senior needs something specific, an errand, assistance, if they just sound uncharacteristically anxious, we're there to support and help them the whole way. And so already back at the beginning, we also launched a campaign called Chesed. Chesed is an acronym for Chabad House Essential Social Services Elderly Drive. And each week, our team of volunteers delivers parcels of essential foods and household goods to our seniors. We're talking about between 50 and 100 food parcels every single Friday that contain essential goods. Before Pesach, we were giving out matzahs and Pesach to-go, Seder to-go kits. We gave out dozens of vouchers for seniors to shop at Maishi's Butchery. And then after Pesach, we introduced what we call the Shabbax. And this has been going on ever since then. In addition to the close to 100 food parcels that go to those who need the essential needs, the Shabbax is something else. It's a weekly Shabbos pack that is delivered to the hands of hundreds of seniors. And it includes freshly baked challahs, always with an additional treat of some sort, whether it's biscuits or back in the cold days of winter, it included soups and salads and other types of delicious delicacies. We have our Wellsprings booklets, which include fascinating Parsha insights. And then we have an activity booklet that has cognitive activities to keep the mind stimulated. And this is, besides for that, we always give some kind of special surprise gift. We've recently given hundreds of seniors large print, beautiful, new Tehillim with magnifying glasses. We've given out other books, thanks to Dr. Harold Cerebro. He's donated books that we've given out to senior citizens. We've given out DVDs and CDs. We've given out, before the high holidays, Lekka honey cakes with honey, and we gave out all types of so many other different things, too many to enumerate, that we've looked after the senior citizens. And we've delivered these boxes with handwritten notes. These were given to seniors living in their own homes or in residences or with their family members. It's a reminder that we're thinking of them, we miss them, and we are here for them. Over the last 8 months, we've created a team of over 100 volunteers. We've delivered to over 30 retirement facilities. We've handed out over 300 challahs every single week. And we've made a difference to more than 1,000 seniors' lives. So Stan, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this with your listeners. And I want to ask them that for next week, to create this pre-Hanukkah miracle on Wednesday and Thursday, the 9th and 10th of December, we are going to launch a matching campaign where you have the opportunity to help keep this light going, that we make sure that there's less oi and more joy. And we ask you to give that joy to the senior citizens. Please support the ones who brought you into this world and have paved your way. My friends, together we can spread the light even further. Stan, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. And God bless you all. Have a great Shabbos and a bright, beautiful Hanukkah. And stay tuned. You could go to our website, www.ChabadSouthAfrica.org/chesed or /seniors to learn more about these programs. I'm Rabbi Ari Kiefman. It's great to be here with you. If you have any questions, feel free anytime to touch base and talk to me. I'll be glad to share with you all about it.
This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
This is the HOD Hour. We're on the air every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. and we like to talk to interesting people. And today we have as our guest a most interesting personality by the name of Gareth Whittaker. And if you've been watching Chasing the Sun about the Springbok rugby team's win in the World Cup in Japan, you will be familiar with the series Chasing the Sun. And what I wanted to, so first of all, welcome Gareth. Your reputation precedes you.
Thank you, man. It's lucky to be chatting with you.
And Gareth, I mean, what is amazing to me is that when you watch this series, you feel as if this is happening live. It's not, you're not going back in time and I kind of think this is happening now.
Yeah. And, that's the biggest
takeaway.
Yeah, it's
amazing. I mean, I've watched it. Yeah, a lot, obviously, because we were involved in making it. And even now, when I still watch it, it feels like it's happening live. It's quite something, yeah.
And what happened? I mean, how did this all begin? What prompted the fact that somebody took a dip and said, you know, let's go for it and let's make this documentary? Because you had to have had this. This is not footage you made afterwards.
Look, I mean, the guys at SuperSport are just brilliant sports storytellers. And in particular, a guy called Mark Jury, he's now the CEO at SuperSport. I think about 2 years ago, he saw something special happening in the Springbok team and in the Springbok camp. And he made a decision to send a couple of camera guys, to travel the world with the box. We've done this kind of stuff together before. You know, we had a team of camera guys with the Proteas at the 2015 World Cup, in Oz and New Zealand. And we follow a bunch of other sports teams. Mark saw this as an opportunity. I think he knew that something special was bubbling within this team. And so he took a chance. I guess good things happen to good people, and this team really was just a group of great people, and the story ended up being far better than we could ever have hoped for, because I suppose in really simple terms, because of the win, but in deeper terms, because of the way in which this team managed to bring our country together again and to give us all hope. And to remind us that as South Africans, we have a lot to believe in and a lot to be hopeful about.
And what is interesting is it's more than just rugby, because it really goes to the heart of winning. You know, what does it all mean? How do you get there? What's the journey? And the psychology behind that must be, I mean, if I look at this and before this whole thing with the Springboks, to be honest with you, I'd lost faith in the fact that this team could ever win a World Cup, you know, let alone a match against any. Then suddenly Rassie Erasmus arrives on the scene, and there's a new spirit, and somehow it filters through to everyone, culminating in a win, which, I don't know if you expected it. I didn't. I think a lot of other people didn't. But Rassie Erasmus must be just an amazing guy.
Yeah, he really is. He's an amazing guy. He's an amazing leader. You're so right. And I'm so chuffed to hear that it feels like more than rugby. And we tried really hard in the making of the series to get that right. This is about, studying what it is to be a team, studying it and what it is to try and big goals, to set, crazy goals and then work your ass off to get there. Rassie, I think Rassie's also, he's a humble guy. He'd say, and he'd be right. He would say it's not all him. This is a collection of people who decided to come together to do something special. And Rassie is an incredible leader and managed to bring them together, but it's the rest of them too. And they all deserve credit and they all deserve, to be put on the pedestal, but I guess they have been.
So what is interesting when you're watching this documentary and you bring in almost everybody, if not everybody in the team, you talk about there's a backstory to each one of, I don't like that term, but there's a backstory to each person, humble beginnings. Some people have more privileged beginnings, but some of them really came from nothing, from nowhere. Mm. And how they overcome adversity. And each one has really a story to tell, and you brought that out in a big way for the South African public. I think this has overcome a lot of barriers, and a lot of information has come through here that nobody would have expected to see in this format.
Oh, thank you, man. You know, that's the thing, I guess, about each and every one of us, is that we all have a story. Each of us. You,
absolutely.
Me. And what informs our story is our context, where we come from, who our ancestors are, what they went through, who our parents are, what they have done, you know, those we choose to surround ourselves with. And like, I've learned so much being part of making this. And I, almost the thing I've learned the most is that when you work hard to listen to other stories, there's stuff that connects you, you know, and you and I are connected by our shared country that we live in, and we're connected to Makazola Mapimpi, who grew up, you know, in Cholomna outside of East London with, you know, very little, you know, by way of material goods or, you know, and even his family life was tough, but we're South Africans, and so that connects us, and then we want to do good things in our life, and that connects us, and we've had, you know, loss, and that connects us, and if we're willing to work, I mean, this sounds a bit preachy. I don't mean it to be preachy. I'm just telling you what I learned, you know. If you're willing to learn, work to understand others, people's context, and to listen to their story, it's surprising how similar we are in some ways. Whether you grow up in Joburg or in Cape Town or in, you know, the Eastern Cape, we're kind of similar people, I think.
What is also interesting in this whole exercise is that you eventually pulled together, you know, I don't know how many were in the squad, 30 or whatever it is, plus the people traveling on. And you bring first of all, you identify the talent. Now that is, I mean, there are a lot of people playing rugby. There are a lot of people managing. You need to identify that talent. And then when you've identified the talent and now you've put them, you know, you've brought them into a circle of people who are so diverse, that, you know, if I looked at the team up there, where would I start? How would you start to galvanize them into some sort of a group, which, I mean, Rassie does that, and everybody else seems to climb on board. The most diverse of people suddenly are, you know, together, hugging, holding each other, backing each other, giving each other the support, which you need in a rugby team.
Jeez, we need a rugby team, we need a country, never mind a rugby team.
but you need to put these people, 15 people on the field and get them to think the same. And then you come up, I mean, he comes up with a thing called the move, and you think, what the hell is this? And then he's shouting the next thing, and you've captured that moment, and the look on his face, and everybody's waiting for this thing to happen, and he knows it's going to happen.
And he knows they're going to get points, and he knows it's audacious, and he knows it's going to work. How much fun.
and you've brought this thing, and you know, he just sits down with him in group discussions and has a discussion with these people who probably wouldn't cross the road to say hello, you know, a year before or whatever it is, and now bosom buddies and all pointed in the right direction. And you've actually gone in at that level and analyzed it and really picked them up and pinpointed their story, which I salute you. You've done an amazing job on that score.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's very kind. It would be wrong of me not to say, look, you know, my name certainly comes up somewhere there in the credits, but jeepers, it's a team effort. There was an amazing group of human beings behind the scenes, just like there were in the team itself, but amazing group of human beings behind the scenes working very hard and dedicating a big part of their 2020 to bringing this story to life. I was just one of those people on that team, and it's a lacquer team to be part of.
And it's not staged. I mean, this is all.
Jeepers, that's the opposite, man. It's so authentic.
I think that's what makes it
so enjoyable. You know it's real. You know this is, guys aren't holding back. I mean, as you say there, the language, the emotion, the way in which some people break down when they talk about it, when they are remembering things. You can't stage that kind of thing. It's just, it's raw and it's heartfelt. I think that's what people have enjoyed so much about it.
And when you're watching, when I watch a match and the team's down, it's a soccer match or a cricket match or whatever it is, and it comes to a break or a half time or something, you think to yourself, now what is going to happen in that change room? And you bring that out in ways, and it's not what you would expect, kicking off cupboards and shouting and screaming. It's low key, but it's so effective. It's riveting stuff. I mean, I know it says it in the promos and everything, but it's actually is as if you're there. Yeah, and you're getting this team talk and you think, well, come on, let's get out there. So I actually thought you worked through this process. I mean, to have gone back all that time. And actually, I have to compliment you on another thing. I think some of the actual footage of the games themselves was actually better than the when I watched it on TV and the actual when the actual game was on.
Yeah, you know, thank you. It's lucky that you noticed that. That was a really quite good fun. Think about it technically, right? When you're watching a game live, you got to have your cameras quite far away and quite high up so that you're covering a lot of action on the field. But these guys in SuperSport have the best camera crews in the world, and they are following individuals during the game as well. Now, during live gameplay, it's hard to follow an individual because you might miss what's happening. But we then went back and with the guys from SuperSport, went to those individual cameras. So you feel like you're much closer to the action. You feel like you're like in the ruck, or you feel like you're passing, you're standing next to Herschel Jahnkes when he's passing the ball. And I think that's what makes it feel a little bit, it feels a little bit different to live.
And you've talked about the plan and you've talked about the different things. And they go on the field and you obviously know that about that. So there's an expectation from the public in this, but, it's, you're kind of there when it happens. So, I mean, that is a big moment.
Yeah. Great fun. Great fun.
When you travel with these players, do they find your presence obtrusive, or is it just they ignore you and finally get used to you?
So the two guys who traveled with the team, a guy called Russell Belt and a guy called Sean Everett, those guys had worked in and around the Springbok world for many, many years. Russell's quite good friends with Russie. And they have a great skill in that they, you know, as much as their job is to film and to carry cameras, it's also to know what it is like to be in a team environment and when to film and when to put the camera away, when to ask questions and when to sit quietly, where to sit on the bus and where not to sit. And this project was very fortunate to have those guys because they just have it's a real skill that, and so, you know, they would know when not to get in guys' faces and when to be able to joke and laugh and have a bit of fun. And they did such a good job of that.
When did this all start? 2019, or was it going on before this?
A little bit before, I think. Because the dates, it's been such a blur since we finished. I'm not entirely sure on the exact dates, but the project's been certainly boiling for a couple of years.
Is it possible to make, I mean, you obviously can't do this all the time. I mean, and probably if the Springboks hadn't won, would it have been so exciting? So I don't know. That's another question. But and I would think that we would have wanted to watch it. But, yeah, we know the outcome in a way. But when you're watching it, you're really going game by game, and you're coming closer towards it. Would you be able to would you risk, or would they go at risk and make these things in the hope that you're going to win? And if it doesn't, well, it just – chuck it into the back room and you go refer back to it some other time.
Look, I think the one thing that we've learned through this process is that the public love it, and the public have fallen in love with it. And you can't always have these stories being about World Cup wins, but I would suggest that a lot of it isn't about the win. A lot of it's about the people and the things that they overcome as individuals or don't overcome. And I certainly hope that we will do many, 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 many more of these. And some will end up in wins and some will just end up as compelling human dramas. Yes. But the beauty of sport is that's what it does. It sets up drama and it sets up human beings doing interesting and challenging things. And I don't at all believe you've got to win every time to make a good show.
Well, also from a, I mean, you know, you need to be humble in victory, but you also need to be humble in defeat, and you need to be able to accept defeat. And I suppose there's a story in that.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you think for kids, the lessons that you are able to learn as a, you know, as a kid getting the opportunity to watch and listen to, you know, these heroes and, you know, some of it is about learning what it's like when you lose and how to behave and, you know, how to bounce back and there's so much more to sport than win and loss. Sport is, I really believe sports, us as human beings at our very best.
I thought winning was everything. Is that not true?
No, man, it's not everything. Connection is everything. Connection is everything. And, like that's what sport gives us. It connects us to our fellow man. Think about a sport like football. There are, I don't know, 6 billion people on the planet. You love it?
Yeah.
You know, it gives us, and you can't all win every time. If you all won every time, we'd stop watching it because it'd be boring.
There's another aspect to all of this. I mean, if you would have to go back and pick, say, which was the best Springbok team, you know, ever, because that question is going to definitely come up.
Yep.
And then it's different times for different things. I mean, the Springbok rugby team of the 60s or the 70s or even into the 80s, you couldn't make a comparison because of the way that things are today, training, the climate, the technology, all of these things. So, you know, it would be unfair to make a criticism. And I suppose in every decade or in every period or every World Cup or whatever it is, that team is going to be the best for that period of time. But now we're going into a new phase. I mean, we're now starting, I suppose, we're 4 years away from another World Cup. What do you think are you continuing with this? Is the series one finished? You're looking at series two?
That's what a great question. I really hope so. Look, I can tell you, I mean, unfortunately this year we've been clapped with COVID. There hasn't been any Springbok games. They haven't played a game since the final. So there certainly hasn't been any filming yet. And I think that those of us who've been part of this project have just been trying to take a breath after we finished it. So, you know, but I certainly hope so. And I can't see why we wouldn't. I hope that we can continue to tell these stories into the future. You know, you talk about picking the best teams ever. I suppose the problem as well with the 60s and 70s is the Springbok teams in those eras, you know, weren't exactly representative of South Africa. There would have been many, many thousands of great rugby players who wouldn't even have been eligible to play for the Springboks. You know, because of the state the country was in at the time. So it's quite hard to look back. Although we do know that we had incredible players.
Yeah.
You know, through 70s, 80s, you think of someone like Mornay du Plessis or Errol Tobias and, you know, but I suspect where you sit with rugby now is the physicality. Even though you look back in those times and you think of a Skulk Burger, like old Skulk and Mornay and Frick, they were incredible. But I think the physicality of these guys now, like, you know, you look at Dwayne from Mullen and you go, that's a big man. Right? You know? And he would have been big if he hadn't done all the gym and eaten correctly and done all of the specialized training. But jeepers, I'm not sure that the teams of old would cope with modern day physicality.
No, you can't.
You know, I just, shucks, but maybe they would disagree with me, the older men. It's always hard, hey, that stuff of who the greatest teams in the history are. I would suggest that this team now is the greatest South African team of all time. And I say that because it's the most representative team.
Yeah.
It's the most representative of real South Africa. You think of the last try that was scored, at the World Cup. You had Malcolm Marks was the first guy to touch the ball. You know, grew up in east of Joburg. The second guy who touched the ball, Peter Steftoy, grew up, you know, on a wine farm outside of Paarl. third guy touched the ball was Lucanio Am. Grew up in King Williamstown in the Eastern Cape. He didn't even play rugby until he was 13. And he was lucky to even be found in the system. And then the last guy touches the ball, Cheslin Colby, colored guy who grew up in Kryfontein, you know, in outside of Cape Town. Like just the last five guys that touch the ball in the trial are proof that this team is the best team we've ever had because it's the most inclusive and the most South African.
And that was a moment. I mean, that was really a moment to savor.
Yeah, cheapest, wasn't it just? Eh?
So this is the Hebrew Order of David. This is the HRD Hour. We're talking to Gareth Whittaker, the producer of Chasing the Sun, the story of the Springbok rugby team in the last World Cup, and of course the victorious Springbok rugby team rubbing it in the faces of the Brits and everyone else in the world not expected to be there. Even I think the British team, the English team must have had a wake-up call. I don't think they were expecting, when that first scrum moved around and they got a penalty, the look on the faces of the Springboks is they knew. At that moment, they knew. And the English knew as well. The message got through. So, yeah, I mean, it's an amazing moment, an amazing series of, and really the way you've compiled it and taken it through, you have to make another series.
That's the plan. That certainly is the plan.
And I'm sure the world waits. How's the success been out of South Africa? I mean, has it shown all over the world?
No, it isn't. Not at this stage.
The British don't want to, but they'd like to use it as a training video.
Well, I hope that they would be able to see some joy in it. Look, certainly I think that there are some plans afoot for it to go further afield than South Africa, but for now, the way to watch it, it's on Showmax, it's on DStv Catch-Up, just all around good fun, huh?
Is this not your normal work, or is it, I see that you do quite a lot of sports stuff, but, I presume you're quite, you're not limited to this. Well, tell us a little bit more about T&W.
So T&W is a storytelling business and a content development business. We believe that stories have great power, and so we tell stories specifically in and around the sports and entertainment space. So this is pretty much in our arc. Certainly not the only thing that we do, but we love telling stories. We're very fortunate to work with some of the best businesses and brands in Africa, and I'm very fortunate to work with the likes of Mnet and Supersport pretty regularly. Telling stories of great South Africans and great Africans. Whether that be sport or music or entertainers, that's pretty much our arc.
I think it stands to reason that you need the client. I mean, the client needs to get paid. I mean, at the end of the day, this is not just a fun project. You need to live and eat. But it's like even going back into the great artists, the Michelangelos, the Leonardo da Vinci's and so on, they needed sponsors. They needed somebody to be able to allow them to develop their talent. I mean, you're not going to look after the money side. You're going to look after doing the product. And I think the world needs content like this.
Certainly, and I mean, I cannot speak highly enough about the guys at SA Rugby and Supersport and Mnet. They just, you say you need the clients. I tell you what, you need the clients, and you need the client to want to tell great stories. And those guys, I mean, they're the best in the business. There's no question. They are the reason this thing's a success. They're the reason that the quality is good. It was Mark and the Supersport team's idea, and Russi himself's idea, and Andy at SA Rugby. You just can't. That's why I say to you, it really is a team. That's not just a nonsense story. It's just a team. You cannot accomplish something great unless you have a team of people. And you just happen to be talking to me today because you find my details. But I'm just one of those people on the team. Yeah, sure.
No, I'm talking to you today because I'm in awe having watched the series and of really, you know, I have to know what's behind it because this is
amazing. I'm so happy you enjoyed it.
You watch these historical movies and everything that you see on TV, documentaries and so on. But this is one of these comes a lot. You've set the tone. I mean, and to be honest, the bar is very high because, you know, you've really captured the moments or the time. And it's live. It's not something you're going back historically researching. This is nothing to research. Here it is. You have to research the background to all of these people and to bring to the fore. I don't think you left out anybody in the team. Was there anybody left out that you didn't interview or?
Steepers, we certainly tried our very best to interview everybody and we, in the research phase, certainly went into as much detail as we possibly could. There were a couple of players that we struggled with just due to the thing being produced during COVID times, and there were a few players stuck in Japan at the time, but you know, we really did endeavor to try and speak to everybody and tell everyone's story in at least a small way through it. Of course, as with all good, like content and TV shows, we have a couple of lead characters who you hear from a little bit more often than others. And that, you know, works for this show as well. But yeah, we try to do this. You know, I agreed with Rassi, myself and Mark and Rassi agreed early on that we would set some principles, storytelling principles for the project. And the first of the principles that we agreed on was that of authenticity. Whilst we wanted it to be dramatic and we wanted it to be entertaining, we all agreed that it had to authentically represent the story as it unfolded and the people within the story. And Rassi did a very good job of keeping us in that world, in the authentic world, because we owed it to them, I suppose, to make sure that we represented their story authentically, because this clearly isn't our story, it's theirs. And so that was a very big part of it.
It was, I think, in fact, you hit on one of the biggest parts. I think part of the success of Rassi is his authenticity. You know, to be honest, he doesn't bullshit the team. You know, the team knew where they were at any one time. And everyone in that team knew. He didn't seem to keep it from anyone. All his discussions were out in the moment or in the open, in the room where everybody participated. You knew what everybody was thinking. You have to feel part of that. And I mean, that I think is a lesson in leadership. I mean, in absolute coaching, you know, don't put each person aside. You want a team, you build a team and you include the team in all the discussions. That part comes through very clearly.
What a great leadership lesson. And be willing as a leader to be vulnerable and be willing as a leader to accept and admit that you don't know everything. And Rassi says it. He says when you ask your fellow players and you ask your fellow management members to help and you tell them that you don't know, he says you will be amazed how much people are willing to and want to help you. What a lesson. What a lesson in leadership and something that you can take outside of sport. I think that too many of us try way too hard to look like we got our shit together all the time. You know?
No, that's right. It's absolutely correct.
And none of us do. Like, we've got it together sometimes, but no one's got it together all the time. And if you are willing to have the authenticity, gee whiz, people are drawn to you as they were to Rassi. And that's a good lesson, I think. The world would be better if we were all a little bit more of our authentic selves.
I think he's one person, I can't say for everyone because I don't know any of them, but if I looked at that series and watched a couple of the episodes a couple of times, he knew his destiny. He knew that this was his destiny and he wasn't 100% sure how he was going to get there, but he knew one thing for sure. He knew he was going to make a way and he did that and he took people along with probably could never have done it on their own, but once they were part of this, they all added a piece.
Yeah.
From the players to the coaching staff to everybody, You could just see the togetherness on the faces of all of them. Everybody was around there. There was a, as I say, I don't know why the rest of the world didn't see that coming. I mean, England must have come onto that field thinking, well, we got this in the bag. We don't have to really, all we have to do was show up.
Yeah, totally. totally. Yeah, it's interesting. He says it actually as he hands over his jersey to Sia just before the final. He says, look, you know, I don't know if destiny's on our side, but we'll give destiny a hell of a run.
I saw that. I wasn't referring to that, but I knew that somehow you would do it. You couldn't have scripted this. You couldn't have planned this whole thing and the outcome, but somehow somebody somewhere must have known this was going to be the end. I don't know how you repeat it as a Springbok team. I mean, Rassie's not going to be there in the next World Cup. Somebody else will be doing it.
Yeah.
Do they have the ability? Can they continue it, or is he going to have a hand in it too? Because we've got great expectations now. The South African public expects.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you know, from what I know and from having watched, obviously chasing the sun, Jacques Nienaber, who's taken over as coach, he's got it. He's pretty damn special. I guess sometimes you need destiny on your side, and I'll have to wait and see if that's the case with Jacques. But he's certainly a wonderful human being, and clearly he has the backing of the players and the rest of the coaching staff and SA Rugby. And so we got to wait and see. We're also lucky. You look at this side, there's a lot of guys who are still there for quite a long time. You know, it's often in World Cup wins, it's right at the end of people's careers, but we've got lots of youngsters who are still very much in the mix for many years to come. Lucanio Am in the back line, who was the back line captain, and yo, Lucanio's got lots of games in him to come, man. He'll be around for another 6-7 years. Cheslin Colby's still got time, still got runway. We got guys, you know. So I'm pretty confident, actually.
Yes, I mean, that's what I say. The South African public now is, you've reached, you know, he's hit the bar. You can't go in as the underdog anymore. You know, it just came at a special time. It came when it was needed because the rugby was in the doldrums. And, I don't know, I think you were losing audiences, but this has brought everyone back. And you've made it special. You've really made it. And I've talked about that. We were going to talk to you and not only to people who love rugby or even want to watch it. But when they started watching us, they were also spellbound. I think that really makes it. And I hope that this gets some traction overseas and really is good for you because you've done South Africa a service.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate
that. If I could give you a knighthood, I probably would. I've always refused the knighthood because I could get down, but I don't think I could get up. So I've refused it, but seriously, all kudos to you, and your team and, Springbok Rugby. And really, I think this has made such a difference in the country. It's just unfortunate that it happened at a time when we went into lockdown. So kind of, we would have been able to see some of the benefit.
Mm.
Although after the World Cup that we won, there was a period when we really just, We dropped dramatically, but I would hope that this wouldn't be the case, that they would continue. I think rugby is one of the toughest games to, you know, if you watch American football and all that, you know, there's breaks, they fall down, everybody gets hammered in 2 seconds, then they stand up and then they do all sorts of other things. Yeah, this is a relentless 80 minutes. I mean, plus the halftime when, you know, you don't know what you expect in the change room, and rugby's a tough game. And this brought out that these are not just thugs behind the scene. These are gentlemen going onto the field and really, you know, playing for each other and playing for the country. Amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thank you for really joining us. And it's really been a privilege talking to you. And I'm going to watch your career. I'm going to see what comes next.
Thank you so much.
We'll definitely talk again. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. All the best to you and to everybody listening.
Thank you.
And I hope you all have a good December.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye. Bye.
So you've been listening to the Hebrew Order of David. We had as our guest Gareth Whitaker, producer, together with his partners and South African rugby of Chasing the Sun, the story of the South African victory. And it's been a pleasure and a privilege having them on. We were due to have Natalie Solomon on the phone with us, but unfortunately we weren't able to on this call. We'll do with her next time. She helped us set it up. And also earlier we listened to Rabbi Ari Kivman talking about Hanukkah and talking about how he deals with the elderly in the community, and kol hakavod to him. And really hats off to Gareth Whitaker and the team for this wonderful series. And if you haven't watched it, go and watch it, because you've missed something if you haven't. Thank you, and thank you in the studio, and thank you to Vuzi and everyone else, and good night.